Welcome to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone, the podcast where we highlight nonprofit leaders in the trenches who share the strategies and tactics they use to grow their organizations and make a difference each day. Let's dive in.
Welcome back, everyone. It's Joe Whipple, and I am joined today with Amy Hahn Rischer. Excited to have you, Amy. Amy is with Piedmont Park Conservancy. Welcome to the show.
Thank you, Joe.
So as is our tradition on the Nonprofit Growth Show, I want to dive right in to a fun or dramatic story. So can you share with the listeners a story of a climactic, dramatic, nerve-wracking moment in your work as a nonprofit professional?
So my most nerve-wracking moments, because this has happened to me a few times, three times in my 10-year nonprofit career, I experienced a very slim operation. So as most people know, with nonprofits, the staff is very minimal and many times bare bones. And I've experienced three times in my career where bare bones went to almost impossible. So I was on a team with eight people that dropped down to three people, which can be sometimes crippling for an organization. And it's really a moment that individuals who are still around, those final three or the final few, can really shine and show their leadership qualities and their work ethic and integrity. And it's very difficult, like I said, when you go from barely having any staff support in a nonprofit environment to losing the minimum staff support and having to change jobs. We tend to be very specialized due to the bare bone mentality. And then when other people drop off in interim, you know, they change jobs for natural reasons, they move on, growth opportunities. Definitely the most climactic times in my career have been when we go from barely anything to almost nothing.
And I think a lot of other people within the industry could relate to that, because I know burnout is certainly a thing for nonprofits as well as employee turnover. Did you experience through those three different instances, did you experience overwhelming burnout going from what felt like, you know, stripped resources to, okay, what is going on?
I definitely experienced burnout, but almost at the same times, or alternating between large inspiration, depending on your personality. And many people who work in nonprofit, you know, they're driven by the mission. And when you have a mission you really care about or an organization that you really care about, these really hard times where there's gaps in employment, or even volunteer gaps, drives you to think differently, work differently, and try harder. But with that, like I said, kind of an alternating pattern. When you have that much drive, that much passion, that much ambition and work, you can definitely lead to burnout. So I think how well I took the burnout personally depended on my home support system as well as my coworkers and team support system.
Interesting. So one of the things that you kind of touched on within that was having a mission that you can really be behind. Can you tell us a little bit about how Piedmont Park Conservancy is making a difference and what you guys are all about?
The Piedmont Park Conservancy is a nonprofit that many people don't think about and they don't have to think about, although we're trying to change that, of course. I represent a city park that is owned and funded by city taxes, but that's just the physical grass on the ground. And it's an amazing time when people are able to come together and see something, a blank slate, and they imagine that it could be better, more than just your standard city park or plain green space. And so the Piedmont Park Conservancy takes a city park and makes it more of an experience. So we manage, you know, landscaping for most of the 200-acre park that we have here, but we also do things that a city government could not do on their own, like operate our camps offer historical tours, manage our website and our social media following just specific to this park. We put on special events, cultural opportunities like hosting the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra here, outdoor movies, plays, free yoga, all of these things that it's difficult to imagine a government being able to sustain and may not even be appropriate for a government to do all on their own. So one of the great things about the Piedmont Parks Conservancy's mission is that we do all of this for Piedmont Park in conjunction with the city of Atlanta. So it's a really great example of how nonprofits and government can work together.
When I see organizations like yours, what I like to think of is you're one of those nonprofits who sometimes flies under the radar, but makes a city more intimate and special than it would be if you were non-existent. And I've spoken with a few other organizations who are pretty similar in what you do as well, but to have a presence where you are, you know, helping upkeep and run events and, you know, involved with sports and pools and summer camps, playgrounds, you have dog parks, gardens, and then, you know, actually hosting events within this space. It's, I think that what you are supplying to, you know, the people in Atlanta, is actually really special. And it's one of those things that, you know, other organizations, you might think traditionally a nonprofit, like, oh, we're going to, you know, help the homeless or feed the hungry. But I think what you're doing is also super important just for the well-being of people within your community.
I agree.
So I'd like to now hear a story of how you got to where you are today. Amy, your title is probably the closest to anybody in the industry so far that actually does touch on, you know, more than one thing. I always think it's funny that that the title of folks within the nonprofit industry, it's like, all right, your title is this, but you do so much more than that. And you do as well. But you are the director of communications, marketing, and PR. And what you do is really beyond all of that. But how did you get to this position and where you are right now?
I got involved in nonprofits voluntarily first and then professionally second. My original interest for my career and what did happen with my career is that I was interested in event planning and I was going to be the best event planner you ever met. And so my original thought was working in hotels and the hospitality industry. And I did. I pursued that. But in order to build experience, I did event planning and public relations event planning for other nonprofits. So after I dabbled in the hospitality industry, I found an interest personally to go into nonprofits and then professionally an opportunity opened up for me. So I started at a 501c6 nonprofit, which is a membership nonprofit called the Georgia Psychological Association. And I did their conference planning and event planning for them. But I also dabbled in communications and marketing for their membership. And on the side, I was doing some work for small nonprofits on a volunteer level. So now I have completely transitioned out of the event planning sphere because I realized that over time, my talents and my interest and my growth opportunity was specifically in marketing communications and PR for a place that had already been very important in my life, Piedmont Park, which used to be adjacent to my home.
So on the lines of marketing and what you have found your strength and your passion for, can you share with the listeners one specific tactic that you have found surprisingly effective in your marketing strategies or even in your fundraising work? I'd love to hear a story of the time you used that.
I think the reason I excel in marketing and communications, and it's important for almost anybody who does for nonprofits, is that I'm extremely organized. I carry that over from my event planner history. And even though it's not an event, campaigns and plans and promotions all have, you know, need research on the beginning, need execution, and need reflection at the end. I think being organized is really important. I also believe that being decisive and confident in your work is important in nonprofits, especially since you've got staff, volunteers, and board members. You're going to have a lot of opinions thrown at you about all the different things that you can do in marketing, from social media to blogs to signs and passing out cards and getting on radio stations. Literally, the list is endless what you could be doing. But if you are going to succeed in nonprofit marketing communications, you'll have limited resources and you can't do it all. So if you're able to strategically make decisions and be confident in those decisions and stay organized once you start executing those decisions, I really think that that's what has helped me the most. And I would encourage other people's to who have those qualities to consider that.
How do you go about weeding that out? Because you put that into words so nicely. And it's something I actually haven't thought about, but it's so easy to say, well, have you tried this? Have you tried that? Why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing that? And with limited time and resources, you have to weed a lot of these ideas out, and do what you think is right. And if it doesn't work, you know, change it up and go from there. But how do you go about weeding out and actually pursuing specific tactics?
Well, it depends on whether or not you're starting a nonprofit or if you're coming into a nonprofit that's already existing, on what I would recommend for deciding on your marketing channels and or weeding out marketing channels. I think that you have to know your target audience first, like any other marketing research would tell you to do, for profit or nonprofit. And then there's a couple of factors that play into it. Where is your target audience currently? What types of products and services and stories do you have to offer, and what channels are they appropriate for? So to give you an example, we know that our target audience for certain things, mainly donors, are females between the ages of 35 to 55, and they really want to hear about the stories that are happening in Piedmont Park and the projects that are happening in Piedmont Park. So a very natural alignment for both storytelling for those types of stories and where that target market is would be Facebook. So we take a lot of time and focus on our Facebook platform there. That would just be like how you choose your channels. In terms of other factors, this is of course whether your expertise on staff. So we've been talking a lot about radio, and honestly, if we do pursue radio, we don't have that expertise on our current staff. So we'd either have to recruit that or outsource it. And if the budgeting is there, that's great. But if not, then we have to just admit to ourselves that's a no and move on. But really, it should be aligned with who you're targeting and what you have to offer back to them. Because if you don't have any stories to share or any messaging to share on certain channels that aren't appropriate for the audience, then you might as well let go.
How do you guys approach relationship building? Whether it's new individuals who are brand new that might become meaningful donors someday, or people who have shown an interest in its next steps to getting them to actually become engaged and involved.
So relationship building is something that we are always learning about. I don't know if I've perfected it. At this point in my career, there are some people out there, especially with fundraisers, who are really good at that. But in terms of in what we do at the park right now, we are looking for people who already have some sort of relationship with our mission. So people who already have a relationship with Piedmont Park, it's either part of their everyday lifestyle, or it's part of their nostalgic childhood, or part of their own children's upbringing. Well, we have learned through our data research that the more frequent somebody comes to Piedmont Park, the more likely they are to be engaged. So we we went ahead and decided, you know, we're looking for somebody who's already connected to our mission. They just don't know it yet. And then we take those opportunities to increase our touch points with them, introduce them on a very basic layer of like, this is who we are. Can we get you engaged in sharing our news with you? So either connecting with us on social media and or signing up on our newsletter. And then we put them on what we call a journey. And depending on what interests they have specified in the beginning, you know, they're a dog owner or they're interested in volunteering or they're interested in learning about events. We have customized different journeys for different people to go through. And then, of course, we do as much as we can through event engagement and face-to-face interaction by just like going out in the park and talking with people, hoping to ultimately convert them into donors and longtime supporters or volunteers.
Is that a tough conversation to have? And the reason I ask that is it's not like if I was enjoying my time in a park and I lived right next door and I went there every single day, I wouldn't connect the dots that like, oh, this much work. There is a nonprofit out there that raises, you know, a couple $1 million a year, and it all goes into the upkeep, the planning, and all of these wonderful things that I am, you know, reaping the benefits of. Is it a difficult conversation to have with somebody who enjoys their time there to take the next step on that journey?
I don't think it's a difficult conversation, but I'm also really a conversationalist, which is why they employed me for this job. But it can be challenging to communicate. I think it's really easy for us to tell people what we do. And I think it's impressive to most people, especially if you have physically been in this park, to understand how large 200 acres is and you know the amount of activity that happens in Piedmont Park. People are appreciative and they are impressed by the work that we do. I think the hardest part about the conversation that we're constantly working on is, okay, we've made you aware that this is what we need to do, but how to overcome the thought of, well, you can make a difference, because it is a 200 acre park. We do have a $3.5 million budget, but it is still a city. Anything that's free, it's a city asset. Other national parks probably have the same challenges in other urban parks, where we're providing something that's governmental, supported in some way by tax money, but communicating that not only do we need you to support, but when you do support, it's substantial enough to make a difference in something that's so vast. And so expensive to maintain, even though people don't realize it. So I think that's the hardest part, is making the connections like, okay, I know that's really cool, but how can I make a difference?
Gotcha. And what do you see really works with that? And I know we were just talking about marketing and the journey you try to get these potential donors to kind of join you on. What have you seen any one tactic make a real difference, or do you use a combination of everything and also, like you said earlier, get out in the park and talk to these people?
Yes, there's a few things that we've found so far that are very helpful in terms of converting people to donors or supporters and volunteers. Having the opportunity to have a full conversation with somebody is one of the most effective ways. It is difficult to find somebody who's willing to talk to you long enough. But if you do have that conversation, or we can use peer-to-peer conversations, word of mouth is definitely our strongest indicator. Providing specific cost examples of how you can support different areas of the park or different functions that we need for the landscaping and beautification for the park has been proven helpful. But like I said, it's mainly hearing a story from a peer or from a staff person on all the intricacies, because our message sometimes opens up more questions than it does answers, and being able to get through all of that's really helpful. And we're also really lucky that, especially for the people who use the park routinely, they have a very natural connection to our groundskeepers and our landscapers and the people who are out and about day to day working in the park, that they might recognize a familiar face. And we have found success in sharing stories and information about the people who are executing the mission in the public eye.
Thanks for sharing that. So I want to jump into some rapid fire questions for you personally, okay. If you don't mind.
No problem.
Here we go. So if you could describe yourself in one word, what would you say?
Organized.
Organized.
Hyper-organized.
Yeah, you hinted at that earlier. I'm jealous. I'm envious of that. What is the most exciting shift you're seeing in the nonprofit world?
I think the most exciting shift is partnerships and or social enterprise, using the for-profit world to have nonprofit benefits or partnerships with that. I think social enterprise is really cool.
What is one thing that you wish more people knew about you and your work? Hitting you with a curveball.
I wish more people knew that. I wish more people knew that I don't see the work that I do every day as nonprofit versus for profit. I see the strategies and the objectives and the tactics and everything. I'm trying to bring as much from the for-profit world and what they've learned and what they've mastered over to the nonprofit world in order to best use our donor dollars to spread our message.
I think that makes so much sense. We can slow down from the rapid fire side of things because I want to dive into that.
Okay.
What have you seen in the for-profit world that you've noticed, wow, we could really benefit from this approach?
I think that especially with marketing and communications, that it typically starts with a traditional donor development. Let's host an event and a fundraiser. Let's send out some letters and shake some hands, and we're going to do it through traditional fundraising. But nonprofits can really make a much bigger impact if they jump on current marketing and communication trends, especially those that are more affordable in the digital world, to stay more relevant. And also, I believe that nonprofits could benefit a lot by understanding how helpful research is. I think that nonprofits underscore the value of research and they just see it as an expense. But really, it'll save them money, time, and effort and improve everything if they valued research more before they started executing their donor development and marketing plans.
And that also makes a lot of sense. I know that when I, a few years ago, when I was working for a large corporation, the amount of time and resources that would go into understanding the problem and potential solutions before we even started testing, like beta testing the solutions, was totally stunning to me. And I didn't realize that nonprofits, might not take that same amount of time. So what are you saying? It's easier to just kind of try to dive into what you think is going to work, or, you know, put your resources in one basket and say, this is what we're doing, before like slowing down and saying, all right, what's the problem? What do we need to know? And how can we really figure this out?
Absolutely. I think that going back to my comment about how it's important for somebody in marketing communications to be decisive and be confident in their decisions. One of the things that helps me be really confident in my decisions is that I know I did the research work ahead of time. And I've chosen channels that are appropriate to my target audience. Again, nonprofit professionals are surrounded by volunteers and board members and other staff. So you have a lot of opinions coming your way. There's lots of things that you could do, but you can only do so much. So actually having research to help you make those decisions with your very limited resources, I think is really important because, again, you don't have the money or the time to just do trial and error. You really should do the research first before you start spending donor dollars to spread your message.
What is something that you understand now that maybe you didn't understand or appreciate 10 years ago?
What I understand now that I appreciate more than 10 years ago isn't specific to the nonprofit world, but it's just the work life in general. I appreciate interpersonal relationships a lot more than I did before. I used to think that being really good, especially on the technical expertise side of things, that if you were competent and skilled and trained in your job, that that was really important. But especially when it comes to leadership and in nonprofit, it's overemphasized. Interpersonal relationships are really important. And again, nonprofits are really slim on their resources. There's constant partnering and negotiation with other departments and decision makers. And the most important thing is that you have the support that you need. And the way you're going to get support is by focusing on interpersonal relationships.
Thanks, Amy. Well, as we wrap things up here, before we go, where can people find you online if they want to connect? And where can they go to learn more about Piedmont Park and Piedmont Park Conservancy?
If people would like to connect with me, I am active on LinkedIn as Amy Hahn Rischer. If you would like to learn more about the Piedmont Park Conservancy, we have lots of information and great stories shared on our website, piedmontpark.org.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. I found that very insightful. You definitely hit on quite a few things that I had never thought of in the way you articulated them, which I always enjoy. Like, oh, that makes so much more sense than how it has been in my head all along. And then you also hit on a few things there that I had never realized applied to the nonprofit world, as you said it did, which I always value learning more and more from these interviews. So thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you, Joe. It's been a pleasure.
Thanks for listening to the Nonprofit Growth Show, presented by Nonprofit Megaphone. If you enjoyed this episode, please consider sharing it with a friend or giving us a rating or review on your favorite podcast network. We appreciate your support. Until next time.